Hey guys, welcome back to Wine, Crime, and TV Time. I'm Kaylee.
And I'm Emily.
And today we have another true crime episode. Okay, so I have a little update on Peyton Houston, who was the young woman in, was it Louisiana?
Alabama.
Yeah. The young woman in Alabama who had gone missing, and they found her behind a house, I guess, behind an abandoned house. And they actually have arrested somebody. In connection, they arrested a 50-year-old convicted sex offender.
Oh.
Charged with the disappearance of her, but it says a 50-year-old convicted sex offender has been charged in connection with the disappearance of a Trustville woman who vanished after leaving a Lakeview bar. Frederick Hampton of Brighton is being sought on a charge of abuse of corpse. So there's another person that they're seeking right now named Frederick Hampton, and he's not charged in connection with Peyton's death, only with actions authorities say that he took following her death. So like burying her. So they haven't determined the cause or manner of death yet. They're still waiting for additional testing. They are also waiting on the toxicology, which I guess takes 4 to 6 weeks. I didn't realize it took that long. And it says here that the office deputy chief said, what we know is no physical trauma to the body of the victim would have led to her death. We have evidence that the victim and the offender were together the night of December 20th, 2019. We have evidence the victim died the next day at a house on McLean Street in Brighton. And we have evidence that after the victim died, her body was disposed of in a criminal manner by Frederick Hampton.
So I'm wondering how she died.
Well, apparently so were they. I'm assuming she... I don't know, because it says here that there's no physical trauma that would have led to her death.
Wonder if it was drug related.
I almost think it would have to be.
Yeah.
But what? Like maybe she just took too many drugs, or maybe like they gave her too much.
Yeah.
Something.
Huh.
That's probably why the testing is gonna take so long, because they have to literally test for everything, not just like the basic, you know, narcotics thing, I would assume, maybe.
Right.
So, yeah, and then here it says Hampton was initially held in Birmingham City Jail on a 48-hour extension on suspicion of kidnapping beginning Saturday, December 28th, but he was released 2 days later because investigators did not have enough to charge him with any crime.
Isn't that creepy?
Kind of, because it's like his like driver's license picture, and you know you're like not allowed to smile anymore.
What's his name?
Frederick Hampton. It's not like totally creepy. He looks like an average member of society. So
yeah,
it also...
he looks average.
What?
He looks average.
Yeah, he doesn't look like anything crazy to me. It also says that investigators have determined Houston was with Hampton on December 20th and December 21st, 2019. She died on December 21st at the house, and it seems like she went willingly and voluntarily with him.
Hmm.
And it says, yeah, we are saying they were together. There's no evidence there was any force.
Yeah.
And I guess they've gotten a lot of evidence that came through from Crime Stoppers, which is great.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. They must have gotten, like, a lot of tips and stuff.
Yeah.
So at least the community is doing their job. And, yeah, it just says, this offender is responsible of this crime, disposing of the corpse in this manner. Additional charges are possible depending on what evidence becomes available. They don't believe that he's... armed and dangerous, just that he's a wanted man, and they want to get him into custody, and says we would hope he would turn himself in. That would be best for everyone.
For sure. He probably won't, though.
Probably not. But yeah, he has quite a few. Oh my god. okay, these are his previous charges. Hampton was previously convicted in 1992 on first-degree rape and first-degree sodomy charges.
The fuck?
Out of Jefferson County. That's so gross.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? So, it says here that for those charges, he served 20 years, 5 months, and 26 days in prison before
he's
his
release. He's, like, fresh out of prison, then. Pretty much. Like, a few years out.
Yeah. He was released on March 22nd, 2012. So, I mean, 8 years.
Okay, yeah, I keep forgetting what year it is.
I know. Same. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, 2012, 2 years ago.
That was last year, right?
He was also charged with kidnapping, but that charge was dismissed. It says, details about those March 5th, 1991 crimes weren't immediately available, but a sex offender notification states the offender, along with 7 other men, committed rape first and sodomy first on an adult female.
Ugh.
Yeah. So yeah, she left the bar at 10:45, because this is also something that I was confused about, because remember she texted the friend?
Yes.
So she left the bar at 10:45 with two heavyset black men, and she left, and it looked like she willingly went with these two men. She had reportedly gone to the bar with co-workers, and friends on Facebook said that she didn't know the men, and that the last text message from her co-worker was sent 2 hours after, or to her co-worker, was sent 2 hours after she had left. So it was sent at 12:15.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I don't know who I'm with, so if I call, please answer. I feel in trouble. Oh, that's so sad. She, like, left with them and then was, like, scared.
That's why you don't leave with people you don't fucking know.
I know. It also says here, similar cases have happened around this state. In 2014, a Pinson woman's body was found burning behind an abandoned Fairfield home. Kenneth Lamar Childers and Nathaniel Fortune were charged with abuse of corpse following the death of 22-year-old Megan Elizabeth Monroe. They eventually pled guilty to the felony charge. Wow. Do you want to guess how much time that they had to serve for?
Like 2 years.
One was 6 years and one was 10 years.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And the one that was 10 years had previous convictions for attempted murder, possession of cocaine, and carrying a pistol without a license. So
sounds like a real winner.
Yeah, it sounds like it should have only been 10 years. There's another one. In November 2017, the body of a 27-year-old Melissa Ann Checkler was found on Egg and Butter Road. Near. Sorry.
I'm sorry, that's not funny. Like, just the street's funny.
Yeah. Near Oak Drive in Columbiana, her body had been at the location for a couple of days before discovered. The cause and manner of death was never determined. And two men were also charged with abuse of corpse, Alan Dion Jones and Anthony Scott Germany, and they pled guilty to the charge in 2018, and they received 9-year suspended sentences. What does that mean, suspended? So, yeah, hopefully they get some answers with that soon. Yeah. I feel like that's, like, actually moving along pretty quickly. Well, not quickly enough, but...
But it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
In December. So. Yeah. Well, I guess we can get into today's case.
Cool.
So today we're going to be talking about Julie Kibowishi. The murder of Julie Kibowishi, I think is how you say it. So Julie was actually born Jory Kibowishi. And then, yeah, I don't know if they legally changed her name or her, like, family and friends just started calling her that, because it's probably easier.
Yeah.
And she was born on February 14th, 1987 in Southern California. So she's a Valentine. Yeah, she was a little Valentine's Day baby. And her mom said that, like, it was such a gift that, like, she was born on Valentine's Day. Like, that made her, like, so special. And she was the youngest of 4 children and her parents' only girl. So they were extremely excited to have a little girl because they had 3 boys.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, Julie was described by her parents as a free spirit. She was extremely nice, almost too nice, graceful, beautiful, dynamic, emotional, strong, had a huge heart, and was very smart. That's what her parents said. And Julie was a really talented dancer. She was attending Orange Coast College, and I think that she danced there as well. I don't know if she was, like, minoring in dance, but she was going for fashion design. And she was really, like, quirky. Like, she had a definitely unique sense of style and just different. So I couldn't really find anything about her childhood, really, but it seems like she had a really great childhood. She was a really good student. She always seemed to follow the rules. There was just nothing that really happened with her. And when she started college, she continued to live at home with her parents, and she commuted to school to Orange Coast College in Orange County, California. She would also tutor other students in her spare time to make some money, and that's how she met Sam Hare, I believe is how you say his last name. That's how his dad says it. And she was tutoring him in anthropology. So Sam Hare was born on May 29th, 1983 in Los Angeles, California. And Sam was an Army veteran who had also attended Orange Coast College. I believe that he had pretty much just started school there. He was very fresh out of the military. Yeah, so he had only served 3 years, which, I mean, I shouldn't say only, but he served 3 years in the military, and then he went on to college. And Sam had been somewhat of a decorated war vet, and he'd even been able to save up quite a bit of money from his time served. Sam had saved about $60,000, and this was, like, kind of known by his friends. They, like, all knew Sam had money from being in the military. I mean, I guess that makes sense because you're just, like, working all the time, and where are you going to spend your money?
Yeah, you're in the military. It's not like you're going to have time to do activities.
Right. And yeah, he didn't have, like, he wasn't married. He didn't have anybody to be sending this money home to.
Right.
So I guess he was planning on continuing to save until he graduated from college and then start a life. And Sam didn't seem to be like all the other college kids who were looking to party all the time. And I mean, from what I gathered, he did like party here and there, but he was more serious and had a plan for his life. And I'm sure that that comes from the fact that he served time in the military and like you kind of grow up quick, I think.
Right.
And yeah, that's the case. So Sam was described by his friends and family as somebody that everybody wanted to be around. However, after serving in the military, Sam suffered from night terrors.
Oh.
Yeah, he would wake up, like, really stressed and sweaty and screaming and, like, searching for a weapon. It was actually, like, really scary from what his friends and family said. His friends claim that, though he had been trying to cope with that, he didn't really let it get the best of him, from what I gathered, but he was trying to move on. I think he was, like, going to therapy and trying to get over these night terrors, which, I mean, PTSD is a serious thing, which I think is what night terrors stem from.
Remember Dakota on Teen Mom, how he had all his, like, PTSD issues? And
yeah.
He, like, didn't really address it.
Yeah, he was really fucked up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Bristol.
I liked her.
Yeah.
So Sam had lived off campus in an apartment complex named Camden Martinique, where a lot of other students from OCC had lived as well. And the apartment complex was described as basically a dorm since so many of the kids from the school had lived there. I don't know if there was any on-campus living. It kind of seemed like this was a very, like, commutable kind of a college, almost like a suitcase school that people, like, went home on the weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
So there isn't much information about his childhood really either, or much leading up to what happened on May 22nd, 2010. So this one, we're kind of just going to like jump right in because there's so much with the case as opposed to like getting to know the people, because there isn't much to know. So school was close to being out and everybody was approaching summer break and maybe preparing for graduation. And on May 21st, 2010, Julie's day was nothing really out of the ordinary. Julie went to dinner with her older brother. I guess he had wanted to discuss some things about his wedding because he was getting married in a few months. And that night he actually asked Julie to be a bridesmaid and gave her like a tiara. And
hey.
Yeah, I don't know. She accepted though.
She accepted the tiara.
Yes, she accepted the tiara, accepted being a bridesmaid, was, like, super excited, but she said that she had to go because she was getting some, like, really weird texts from her friend Sam asking her to come over that night alone at midnight. So Julie went to Sam's, and her mother thought it was somewhat strange that she never came home that night, and she found it really weird when it was 11 o'clock in the morning and Julie still wasn't home. So she's calling her phone, she's getting no answer, and her concern really kept growing. And meanwhile, at the same time, Sam's dad, Steve, had started getting really concerned because he wasn't hearing from his son, and Sam was actually supposed to go home that weekend. So this was like a Friday night that Julie was getting these texts, and this is a Saturday morning now.
Okay.
So he's like, well, I haven't heard from him. He's not here. What the hell is going on?
Right.
So when he stopped responding to him and he didn't show up at this point, Steve, which is Sam's dad, he decides that he's going to drive down to Sam's apartment to see what's going on and why Sam is ignoring him.
And how far away is that?
I think it was like an hour or two. I want to say that his family was still in the L.A. area.
Okay.
And he was in Orange County. So. So when Steve gets to Sam's apartment, nothing could really prepare him for what he was going to find. Steve had an extra key to Sam's apartment. So he let himself in and he found a woman shot to death on Sam's bed, and Sam was nowhere to be found. So Steve immediately calls the police, and I want to play you some of the 911 call.
Okay, what's going on, sir?
There's a body in my son's apartment.
There's a what?
A dead body.
Are you sure, sir?
Okay,
hold on just a minute. Is it someone that you know, sir? Does your son know who it is?
He's not here.
Okay. Do you know where your son is?
No, I don't.
So definitely very emotional.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure he's like a panicked mess. Like, also, I actually really like commend him for immediately calling 911, because I think a lot of parents, if they walked into that, they wouldn't, because they would
be like, oh my god, my son is in trouble, he might have killed this person.
Yeah, and they do everything they could to cover it up.
Yeah,
so I actually really commend him for that. But
yeah,
so detectives arrive on the scene and discover that it's Sam's friend Julie Kibuishi, and they inform her family. When Julie was found, she was shot twice in the head, her pants were down to her knees, and she had "All yours" written on the back of her shirt, like on her shirt, on the back of it. They also noticed her purse was on the ground with her cell phone still in it, and they ran tests to see if Julie had been sexually assaulted. At this point in time, police are zoning in on Sam as the prime suspect in the murder of Julie. Obviously, I mean, Julie was found in his apartment and he's missing.
Right.
And Julie's mother at this point in time is like super heartbroken, because she always thought Sam was like a big brother to Julie. She knew that he was one of her best friends, and she was like, how could he do this? And it just didn't really make sense. Nothing was adding up. But detectives look into Julie's phone and see the text messages from Sam that night. And the first text message that she got from him said, "Can you come over tonight at midnight alone? Going out for a bit. Very upset. Need to talk." And then a second text, and I'm not sure if she responded and then she got this second text, but a second text said, "Please, no sex. I need to talk to someone." And Julie responds back to Sam at this point and says, "LOL, ew, Sam, we are like bro and sis, no sex." And Sam responds again, "I'm hurting with some bad fam crap. I can't be alone, no sex, please, I'm begging as a brother."
But no sex as a brother.
Yeah, super weird. Like, weird texts.
Uh-huh.
So police saw this and they were really concerned about these texts. And in fact, like, the fact that Julie had wound up dead after Sam was begging her to come over to the house alone at night at midnight, like, clearly said, come alone.
Uh-huh.
So detectives begin digging into Sam's past, and they actually come across something pretty big. Sam was arrested for being involved in a gang incident in Ventura County, California, when he was 18 years old. And it was among like a dozen other people. And Sam had been arrested in connection to the death of a man who was beat to death by the group. The case went to trial. And while almost all of the men were found guilty, Sam had been found innocent of this crime, which I don't really understand, but I didn't really look into this crime. But even though Sam was innocent, detectives couldn't help but wonder if the conviction was either, like, wrong or if this kind of had something to do with that. They also had thought that maybe Sam could be a person of interest because of his, like, military background, and maybe he had had a, like, an episode and freaked out, you know?
Right.
So Sam's friend Ruben had also been trying to get a hold of him after he no-showed a beach party that he was supposed to go to, and Sam wasn't responding.
He had a lot of plans that weekend.
Yeah, he did, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure when the beach party was, if it was Friday or what, because he was supposed to be going home. Or maybe this was after that weekend that, like, they still couldn't get a hold of him.
Right.
So Ruben decides to call Sam again, and somebody had finally picked up the phone but said nothing. So Ruben's like, hello? And the person on the other end responds, yo, bro, what's up? And Ruben claims that he found this really strange immediately, and he asked, who's this? Because Sam had never called him bro.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, who does that? Like, I feel like nobody is ever like, yo, bro. Yep. So he claims that whoever he was talking to was not Sam. And he said that the voice was totally different, and he got, like, really, really defensive when he asked who it was. Like, the person on the other line got really defensive. And he said that he was dealing with a lot of things right now, and then hung up. And when Ruben tried to call back, there was no answer. So Ruben and all of Sam's other friends claimed that there was no way that Sam would hurt Julie. Even though everything was, like, super stacked against him, they totally believed in his innocence.
Mm-hmm.
And detectives were starting to fear that they had no leads on finding Sam. They felt like if they were ever going to find out what happened to Julie, then they had to get to Sam to get some answers. So finally, they got a little bit of information. Sam's father, Steve, he also was, like, actively looking into everything. Like, he was, like, really trying to help out the investigation, but he had pulled Sam's bank account information to see if his debit card was being used anywhere, because the two of them had, like, a shared bank account, I guess. So it seemed like Sam's debit card had been used at an ATM in Long Beach, and it withdrew $400, and then he went to a pizzeria nearby and I guess got, like, a slice of pizza or something. Yeah. So detectives were able to pull security footage from the ATM so they could get an image of Sam using his debit card. And they got a lot of answers, but they also got so many more questions because it wasn't Sam at the ATM using his debit card. So detectives stake out the ATM and the pizzeria to see if whoever was using Sam's card would come back. And they go into the pizzeria and, I guess, show a picture of the person that was at the ATM, and they're like, have you guys seen this guy at all or whatever? And the people from the pizzeria actually recognized him, and they gave police an address to go find him. So police set up surveillance teams all around this house and wait and see if the man that they're looking for would come out. And when police were surveillancing this home, detectives were also interviewing anybody close to Sam and Julie. So they were, like, looking into, like, neighbors and friends and classmates and stuff like that, just trying to figure out, like, if anybody had any idea where Sam could have gone. So they spoke more to Sam's friend Ruben, who still believed that Sam was being set up and that somebody else had his phone. They spoke to a few of Sam's neighbors. They spoke to his neighbors, Rachel Buffett, and her fiance, Dan Wozniak, I think it's Wozniak. And they also lived in the same complex as Sam and were also attending Ocean Coast College. Rachel was attending for acting, and Dan was attending for acting and directing. So they said that they had seen him on Friday walking through the complex with a friend that they had never seen before, but he was wearing a black baseball cap. So police were hoping that they'd be able to find the man with the black baseball cap and maybe he'd be with Sam. And they thought that maybe this was the person who used his card and was at the pizzeria. So they thought all these things until another pizza had actually been ordered from that pizzeria using that debit card again. And remember the house that police were surveilling? Well, somebody inside of that house is who ordered the pizza. So they rush over and they're hoping to find Sam's card as well as Sam in there. And a teenager named Wesley Freilich opens the door, and police arrest him after seeing that he's the young man in the ATM surveillance footage. And the detectives tell Wesley that they think that he's hiding Sam Hare in his house, but Wesley's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And for a while, Wesley just keeps saying, I didn't do anything wrong. He's like, I don't know. I honestly have no idea what you're talking about. I don't even know who Sam is. Like, whatever. And then they show him the surveillance footage of him at the ATM using Sam's card. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know what? I do remember the name on the card being Sam, now that you say that. But Wesley claims that he never knew Sam Hare. So he claimed that somebody that he had known worked at a bail bonds agency, and that person was actually looking for Sam because he had skipped town and he hadn't paid what he had owed. So he said that the guy told him that the company has to withdraw the money from the account, and that they were looking for a few third-party people to hire to withdraw the money from the account. And Wesley claimed that he even saw paperwork that looked legit, and, like, Sam had owed money to this bail bonds agency, so he was, like, he didn't really, like, ask questions. He was just like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, and he got paid to do it.
Right.
And so Wesley claims that he even knew the guy who had asked him to do this, so he trusted him. And yeah, when he was asked to do this, he said that the guy had told him to, like, go ahead and get himself a slice of pizza with the card afterwards, which, like, so I found, like, this whole thing weird that he, like, thought this was normal, that he's, like, taking somebody's debit card and, like,
but he's a kid, right? Teenager.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, like, I just found it weird that he didn't find it suspicious that he was, like, able to use this person's card to go get pizza.
Right, but, like, okay, for you and I, right, really suspicious for sure. For Dennis?
I know. And if you see this kid interviewed, you're like, this poor kid is so dumb.
Yeah.
So Wesley claims that the guy that he had trusted was an older friend that he would go to for advice when it came to acting, and he'd been his director before, and the older friend was Dan Wozniak, who was Sam's neighbor. So this just led police to more questions, because they were like, what does Dan have to do with this? And why is he hiding Sam? Like, they lived in the same complex. They were friendly, but it was just kind of, like, weird. So now I kind of want to talk a little bit about Dan, because he is going to be a little bit of a big character coming up. So Dan was a community theater actor, and he was extremely active in the community, which was how Rachel and Dan had met. The two both had shared a love for acting, and honestly, the community really loved Dan. Anybody who worked with him said he was a great guy. They said he was especially great at directing. His actors claimed that he really knew what he was doing. He always helped them to be their best. And Dan and Rachel both claimed that they worked really great together, and they actually wound up deciding to move in together very quickly into their relationship. And soon after they got engaged, they were planning a wedding. And at the time when Sam went missing, Dan and Rachel were only a week away from their wedding, and Rachel claimed that she couldn't wait for the wedding. She was really excited about it, as any girl is.
Right.
But she said that mostly she was excited because she couldn't wait for the stress of the planning to be gone. She said it was, like, just a lot.
Yeah.
So she said that Dan only had a few opinions on the wedding. Like, he wasn't this, like, overbearing groom, which I feel like most grooms are like that. They just, like, are like, yeah, whatever makes you happy is, like, totally right. Fine with me. Mm-hmm. However, only 2 days before their wedding, Wesley was in the police station claiming that Dan had told them to use Sam's card to get the money that Sam owed this bail bonds company. So, you know, this kind of put a damper on the wedding week.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah, a little bit. So at this point, detectives obviously have so many questions, and they're trying to piece together Wesley's story. So Steve Hare seems to still be doing all of his investigating alongside with the police, and he actually decides to contact Dan after getting this information. I guess that somebody had given, one of his friends had given Steve a list of all of Sam's friends and phone numbers, and Dan was on it. So Dan claims that Sam was really nervous when he saw him the day before Julie's murder, and that he was talking about family problems and that he was really nervous about going home that weekend. And Steve said something about this didn't really sit right with him. And he felt that Dan was lying. So detectives on the case agreed with Steve that Dan was lying about something, but they just, I think that they both differed on what Dan was lying about. Detectives believed that Dan was covering for Sam. They thought that Dan was keeping Sam hidden to help him get away with the murder of Julie. So they decide that they need to meet with Dan and see if he can lead them to Sam. So on the night of Dan's bachelor party, police show up and to ask questions. And at first I found this really weird because, like, obviously they know that this guy's at his bachelor party. Like, you can't just let him have the damn bachelor party. Like, it can't wait until the next morning. But then I thought maybe police thought that Sam would have gone out with him for the bachelor party. So they thought that they would, like, find him. So, I mean, I don't know. And I think that also maybe they thought this would be a good time to get Dan because he probably had a few drinks in him and maybe he'd be more willing to, like, talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, obviously, Sam wasn't there. And they actually arrest Dan. They arrest him on accessory to murder after the fact. And they bring him in hopes to get him to start talking. And not only did he talk, he literally did not shut up. Like, he just babbled on. So he starts to tell the police how Sam and Dan came up with this fraud scheme. They were going to give the card to Wesley, have him withdraw the money from different ATMs. Sam would then report this as fraud and claim the card was stolen. And then the money would get replaced and the two would split the profit. Dan claims that something went wrong and they didn't get a chance to even collect much money. Sam, I guess, had come to Dan. It's so confusing, Sam and Dan. And told him that there was a dead body in his apartment. And I'm going to play a little bit of this interview so you can hear what Dan states happened.
Oh, jeez.
There's a lot of interviews.
I got a knock on my door. I want to say it was about 8:30 in the morning. Okay. I opened the door. It was Sam. I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? Everything good? He's like, not good. We're in trouble. I'm like, what do you mean we're in trouble? What happened? He's like, I can't talk about it here. We need to get the f*** out of here. He's like, there's a dead body in my apartment. He's like, okay. Basically, as soon as you left me, I started doing some drugs and drinking at night because I was very depressed about my family. I said, what did you do? He's like, I got a gun. He asked me for sex. He was pretty f***ed up. He said no. And then he just shot her twice in the head. I'm really like, you're totally f***ing with me right now. Like, Julie's like a friend. Why the f*** would you do this? He's like, because I was not in my right frame of mind. He's like, you wrap me out, I'm going to f*** kill you. And better yet, I'm going to start with your wife. And then I said, after 3 days, I'll have you blowing your full money or whatever. And then you're going to get the f*** out of my life. I got greedy, and I didn't want any harm to come to me or my wife.
Okay. Where do you think Sam's at, man?
Like I said, the last place that I saw him, honestly now, was on when I dropped him off at the Los Altos Shopping Center, Bellflower and Spring, in Long Beach.
So I kind of want to just explain what went on there. So Dan claims that Sam came to him and said that they had an issue and that Julie is dead because he asked for sex and she said no, so he shot her twice in the head. As you do.
I also do that.
Yeah, right. And he says that, you know, he needs to get away and that Dan has to help him. And in exchange for his help, he'll give him some money for his wedding. And Dan claims that he really needed money for his wedding. Which I just feel like, how are you going to be implicated if you don't help him? You know what I mean?
Right. My other question is, if his wedding was a week away, his wedding should have already been paid for.
Right. And also, her family was paying for the wedding.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I guess, like, they had financial struggles, though, too. I don't know. But, yeah, that whole thing was so weird. And he claims that after this, he drops Sam off at the Los Altos Mall or whatever and never sees him again. And pretty much detectives keep, like, pressing him, and they're, like, trying to find out more information. So they continue to press him, and he does talk more, of course.
What we're going to do is, this is a swap. Can I get a swap for Elka to eliminate you? Should I take a second here?
Oh, eliminate me?
Yeah, eliminate you from any issues.
Okay.
And that's why I want to get a sample from your saliva, basically. Just eliminate you. Okay? It's in your best interest.
Yes, most definitely, sir.
So basically, just open your mouth for me. That's it.
Oh, you're
okay. You're being upfront with us. You've been honest. You had nothing to do with anything. There should be no reason why we should find your DNA anywhere in certain areas and stuff like that. That's what we do.
Now, I was in Sam's apartment Friday afternoon.
Okay.
And I know I did use the bathroom.
You did use the bathroom?
I used the bathroom, and I went... I'm not sure if I went out on the patio or not. Most of the time I do, but that day I went out my dinner.
Okay.
So, now, at this point, detectives are asking for a DNA sample. And also, I want to point out that, like... the way that detectives word things a lot, they make you seem like it's just not an option. They're just taking your DNA, but legally you don't have to submit your DNA. But he does, because he's probably not smart.
Right.
And thinks he's smart. So, yeah. So, pretty much, like, what he's saying is, I love how his story just changes right from there when the detective's like, yeah, we're just doing this because then your DNA shouldn't be anywhere. He's like, well, actually, I did go to the bathroom on Friday.
And I might have been on the porch.
Yeah, he's like, I may have gone on the patio. I usually do, but I don't know if I did that day. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, is he saying that he usually just pees on the patio? Like, you know how guys will, like, just pee outside?
Yeah.
I didn't really know what he meant by that, but I thought that was so...
I took a shit on his plants.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. And also, I just found it weird that he's like, oh no, I was in his apartment on Friday. I used the bathroom. Like,
but if he was a neighbor, why don't you just... I mean, if I lived in a complex, I would just probably just walk home because I prefer my bathroom over everyone else's. So.
Same. But, I mean, I guess if you're hanging out, but he's not claiming they hung out. He's basically claiming that,
he's like, I went to his house to pee.
And maybe stepped on the patio.
And then I left.
Yeah, so detectives are, like, super suspicious of him now. Like, they're like, okay, he has to know where Sam is. Like, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And they keep pressing. And he just keeps talking, so...
they keep going.
Listen to some more.
I think you know a little more about this thing than you're divulging to us.
No, I don't.
I think there's a whole lot more.
There may be, but please question me. And any gaps that I want to fill, absolutely.
As far as your participation in this thing.
As far as my participation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Talk to me.
I am, officer.
Huh?
Yes, I helped him get away. Yes, I knew that he had killed someone, and yes, I knew that I
stop. Stop right there. We got your DNA.
Yes.
Okay. Where's that DNA going to be show up?
In Sam's car.
What about Aunt Julie?
No, Aunt Julie.
You sure about that?
Yes, I'm positive about that.
Did you see Julie dead in the apartment?
No, I did not. No, I do not. No.
You better think about that. I'm going to give you time to think about it.
I did not see Julie dead in the apartment. I didn't.
Were you there when she was shot?
No, I was not.
Are you sure about that?
You're really scaring me right now.
I'm not trying to scare you.
No, I have nothing to do with this because my life was in danger with my wife. I'm sorry.
How was your life in danger?
He threatened it.
We're going to give you time to think. All right, listen to me.
Yes, sir.
All right, stand up and we're going to go back in there.
So they circle back to that DNA, and he starts getting, like, very flustered now at this point, because they're asking him if his DNA is going to be on Julie, if he saw Julie's body and all these things. And it just, I mean, he's claiming no, but I don't know. But yeah, so I don't think that there's much to really comment on there because there wasn't much talking.
I just love how he's like, my life was in danger.
Yes,
because he like threatened it.
Right, and if you watch any videos of his acting, he is so over the top. Like, that's what he sounds like when he's acting.
Well, he isn't, yeah. He's practiced this shit, probably.
Oh, I'm sure, and he was, like, thrilled to be, like, having this scene going on. But also, I wanted to point out, because I don't think that I said this before, he did have an alibi that night. He had a show that him and his fiance were in, okay. So you know. But the show ended. I'm not really sure when it ended, but it definitely ended before midnight.
Did he ever get married?
You'll have to wait and see. So I also just want to say that at this point in time during the interrogation, you know, they still kind of think that he just had more to do with it than he's saying. They're not necessarily
fully commit the murder.
Yes, they're not totally suspicious of him, but they are suspicious of the fact that he's not saying where Sam is, and they found it strange because, you know, why is he going to implicate himself in this if he didn't have a bigger part in this, you know?
Right.
You don't just go around, like, claiming this for no reason, like, oh yeah, I just, like, helped my friend get away who killed somebody.
Right.
I just wanted to point that out.
Want to talk about what happened to Sam?
You're arrested for murder, okay? Accessory to murder. That's what you're being arrested for. You don't want to talk to us? Tell us anymore? That's
okay,
it.
Okay,
no, we're done.
Hold on.
Whoa. Okay. We're done. Unless you want to talk to us, we're done.
I'll talk.
Whatever. We want to hear.
Yes, I will talk. Yes, I will talk. I'm awake. I'm listening. I'm active. Yes. I will talk to you about anything if it gets me to my wedding on Friday. No. That's what I will promise.
Anything you want.
What do you want to tell us? We're not throwing. What do you want to tell me?
I'll tell you anything you want to know.
I just want to say one thing before I keep playing this. I find it a little, like, comical that he knows he's being arrested for accessory to murder, and he still thinks he's going to make it to his wedding on Friday.
He's like, but you'll let me out for, like, 6 hours from my wedding.
Hours? Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, but if you're arrested in that, like, you're not getting out for your wedding on Friday.
They're not just, like, going to be like, oh, you're getting married? Sure. It's fine.
I'll let you out. This one time.
Yeah. Don't tell anyone, though.
Go ahead. We're listening.
Yes, I helped Sam get away. Yes, I did not know what he was planning until then. Yes, I lied to you guys earlier. Yes, I did stuff that I'm not proud of. That's it. I'm a better guy than this. I'm sorry that I took money. I'm sorry that I cheated the system. I'm sorry.
Dan, you got the answers. You can help us.
I don't know what else you want me to say. I don't know.
Tell us.
I don't know.
Tell us the truth. You're not that good of an actor. You can prompt and do your stuff. This is your chance to clear the air.
Where is Sam?
Not without a bargain that I'm out Friday.
We're not in a position to bargain, okay.
Okay, fine. You know what? He didn't come down. He came down and said, help me. I went upstairs and yes, I saw body. Is that what you want to hear?
No. We want to hear the truth.
That is the truth.
Okay, then tell us what happened. How did that play out? And what'd you do when you got up there? How'd your DNA get on her?
Because I was right over the body.
What's that?
Because I was right over the body.
Okay. So how'd your DNA get on her?
That I don't know.
DNA doesn't just fall off.
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't touch her. I didn't do anything.
What did you see?
I saw 2 gunshots in her head. And I saw her pants, like, ripped and cut. And I saw, like, you written on the back of the shirt.
Where were the 2 bullet wounds?
I don't know.
Sam said he shot her twice.
Okay.
And but you I just, saw,
you
I
just,
saw.
I didn't see, you just told us. You saw two bullet wounds. You were standing
no,
over.
No. Okay.
Stop.
Okay.
How did your DNA get on? I was standing over the body. I saw two bullet wounds to her head.
Thank you for seeing that.
You can't even keep your lies straight.
Listen, she said he shot her twice.
I saw two bullet holes to the head.
I just wanted to pause so we could discuss a little bit. First of all, when he's lying, he does that, yes, I did blah, blah, blah. Yes, I la, 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 la. Yes, I ba, 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 ba. But, ba, 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 ba. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell right there, that's where the lie is beginning. And I thought it was great that they're like, you're not a very good actor. Because that set him off.
Yeah.
And gave them what they needed. I mean, they definitely pushed him. I think that this interrogation went on, like, all night. It went on a long, long time. But I love how he's in there bargaining. He's like, I'm not saying anything without a bargain that I'm out of here on Friday. And they're like, we're not in a place to be doing that.
But also, like, if my fiancé was in jail, got out for the wedding, there wouldn't be a wedding. I'm sorry.
No.
There's just no. It's not happening.
Definitely not. So, yeah, I found that a little, like, comical that he is, like, bargaining, and then he gets really mad. And now, all of a sudden, he did see the body, so his story changes. And he was over the body, and his DNA fell off onto Julie, pretty much.
It just hopped on off.
Yeah, just it popped right off. Although, I mean, hair does fall off.
Sweat,
saliva, like, DNA does fall off. Just saying. But, I mean, this is what I don't get. I guess if you're not, like, us and obsessed with true crime, then maybe you wouldn't know this, but how can you possibly think that after, I don't know, let's say it's even 10 hours that they got his DNA, which I don't think it was that long of a time frame, how can you possibly think that your DNA testing is back already on everything?
Oh, yeah.
You know, how can you not say, like, you do not have DNA evidence of anything?
Yeah. It's just too short an amount of time for that to happen.
And how are you not asking for a lawyer?
Well, because he's stupid, Kaylee.
I know. He's like just
really very dumb.
I think he loves it. Like, I think he loves the attention and the
act
that he's being able to do. That was another thing I wanted to comment on.
The bullet wounds.
Mm-hmm. Saying that he saw them.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, no, he didn't see them. Sam told him. And then he really stuck to the whole Sam telling him thing. If anything, you should have just stuck to the seeing them part.
Yeah, I mean, what's another bullet hole? You said you saw one. What's a second one?
Yeah, I don't understand why he, like, said that and then said Sam told him, but he didn't see them. Like, I would have been like, oh, no, I saw them, but Sam also told me. I wouldn't be like, no, I didn't see them. I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. Like, he's just getting all trapped the hell up.
Seven hundred.
Yeah, he's getting all twisted up in these lies, and now all of a sudden there was no sexual assault. And also what I find weird, I wanted to point this out, is in most, like, sexual assault cases anyway, the victim isn't usually shot. That's, like, very rarely how it goes. That's usually, like, a strangulation thing. Yeah. Or, yeah, it's never really shot. So now Dan's claiming that he helped clean up the apartment after Sam murdered Julie, but he's struggling to keep his story straight. But, yeah, there's so much footage of this interrogation with Dan because he just keeps talking and it was like hours long. I just can't seem to find it all. But they're still pressing him on where Sam is, and Dan still claims that he doesn't know. So police book Dan and he gets his one phone call and he uses it to call his fiance Rachel. And I want to play this call in a minute because it's kind of weird. But also keep in mind that Rachel and Dan are literally supposed to be getting married now the next day. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting
out for his wedding.
Yes. He's sitting in a jail cell on charges of accessory to murder. And now she has to go and call all these people invited to this wedding that has to be canceled and tell everybody that the wedding's not happening.
Just kidding. My future husband's a murderer. Can't get married.
And I'm like, how unfortunate. And on top of all of this, Rachel's brother Noah is also arrested because detectives thought that he had been involved and that he knew where Sam was.
Oh my God.
It's so crazy. And when Rachel tells Dan's parents about this, she said that his dad's response was really weird. All he said was, well, he was a really good kid. So I thought that was kind of weird. So I don't know if, like, they're trying to insinuate that maybe the dad also had something to do
with it, yeah.
With it. But I want to play this phone call between Dan and Rachel.
What did you do?
I helped Sam cover some stuff up and helped him get some drugs. That's it. I didn't murder anybody.
Babe, why on earth would you try and cover for him?
Because we needed the money.
No, we never need money. We need to be good people and just have each other.
I'm sorry.
My mom's working on canceling all the wedding plans now, and I just talked to Tim, and I need to make a phone call to the detective now.
Why?
Because Tim's involved.
Because of what?
Or I need to call the detective first because I need to call him and let him know before they catch me on this recording device because it looks like I'm not trying to tell him right away. Tim says he has evidence with him or he knew where it was or something.
Then I'm doomed.
What?
Tim said that?
Yeah, do you know that Tim has some evidence?
Yeah. God, oh God, oh God.
Well, this is ridiculous, and I have to go tell the detective the truth.
Baby, Tim did speak up.
Only to me so far, and it was in passing. I said, I'm going to the police station right now. Danny's been arrested. He starts freaking out, and he was really frantic, and he said something, and something slipped, but he had evidence.
No, don't, that can't be found.
No, babe, I'm gonna do it.
Listen to me. No.
What?
Trust me, please. I have to tell the truth on what I did. And I think you now know what it is. And it's bad. Imagine the worst, and that's what I did.
Dang.
Oh. So, yeah, that's the phone call. And
she's like all business. She's like, I have to go.
Yeah, she's like, no, I'm gonna do this. And he's like, no, please don't. So after this phone call, Dan decides that he needs to confess to what he's done, and voluntarily he goes back into the interrogation room and confesses that Sam didn't kill Julie. In fact, Sam was dead and Dan had murdered him and then murdered Julie. And don't you worry, because he confessed this all on tape.
You said you wanted to talk to me. What's going on?
I'm crazy and I did it.
You did what?
I killed Julie and I killed Sam.
Okay.
So Dan confesses that he killed both Julie and Sam, finally. Mm-hmm. And poor Sam, because his name has just been, like, drugged through the mud for the past, like, week, thinking that he killed this girl and ran away. And now he's dead.
Right.
So Dan confesses that he lured Sam to a theater by telling him that he needed his help to carry down some heavy objects from the attic. And he says that once they had gotten up to the attic, he shot Sam, and he claims that Sam was still alive, saying, "I need help." So Dan shot him again. Dan then went to the theater that he was scheduled to star in the show of afterwards and left Sam up in the attic of this theater. And he basically, like, gave himself an alibi by being there. There's actual, like, footage of the show because an audience member recorded it. And it just makes me so uncomfortable to, like, look at because it's, like, right before this, he, like, murdered Sam. And he's just, like...
He's, like, chilling.
Yeah, going on, like, acting, whatever. So Dan claims that he texted Julie from Sam's phone while he was backstage in between scenes. And that's the text that she was getting that were strange while she was still out to dinner with her brother. So Dan goes on to say that he met Julie at Sam's apartment, telling her that Sam also told him that he was having some problems and that he had a key so he would let the two of them in. Which is okay. Weird. He claims that he went to the bathroom when he'd gotten in the apartment, which, if you remember from earlier, he had already claimed that he'd been in the bathroom that day while he was still lying about what happened. So I find it weird that he, like, felt that that was so important to say, that he went to the bathroom. Yeah, he says that he lured Julie into the bedroom by saying, "Did you see what that on Sam's bed?" Like, he didn't really say what, he just tried to get her in there. And she's like, "Oh, no, what?" Like, just totally trusting.
So, and I guess they've met before.
Oh, yeah. So they were all friends and friendly. And actually, his wife, Rachel, and Julie had bonded over dance. They both, like, loved to dance. So okay. They were actually pretty good friends.
Okay.
So, yeah, they all knew each other very well. But he says that after Julie, like, came over to the bed, she, like, leaned over and he shot her twice in the head. He also says that he staged it to look like a sexual assault by cutting her pants with a pair of scissors and pulling them down, and by writing "all yours" on the back of her shirt. So he claims that the following morning he went back to the theater with an axe and a saw that he actually borrowed from Rachel's brother Noah, and dismembered Sam's body in an effort to make it more difficult to identify Sam, and he scattered the majority of Sam's remains in a park nearby, but he left his torso in the attic of the theater.
Oh my god. That he
murdered him in? I thought that was, like, really weird.
So strange.
He also claims that he was smiling and laughing when dismembering Sam's body.
Why would you say that?
You know, I'm gonna play one more little clip of him talking.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you what I think about it after. But I find that very disturbing. And, like, the whole thing is disgusting.
What was going on in your mind when you were dismembering the body? Dismembering Sam's body?
I was actually smiling and laughing.
Okay. Why do you think you were doing that?
I don't know.
And your motive behind killing Sam was?
Money and insanity.
Okay.
I don't know why I did.
You hear his laugh?
Yeah, he sounds like a psychopath.
So I think that he now, like, that he's been caught, he's trying to plead insanity. That's, I think, what he was going for.
Kind of like, what's her face? The one that killed people that she didn't know that we did a couple weeks ago.
I know, I, like, remember having this conversation, I can't remember who it was.
I'm picturing her in my head, hold on.
Not Jody.
Pam Huff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like I think he was trying to like get on with the insanity plea. Now that he's caught.
Right.
Which he is fucking insane, but that never works. I don't know why people ever try it. It never works.
No. No.
So, yeah, when he's but asked I mean, why...
Good idea.
Yeah, like, great. Good,
yeah.
Good try.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when he's asked why he murdered Sam and Julie, he claims because of money and insanity. And I just can't even believe that there are people out there that are, like, this cold. You know, like, these are people that you're, like, friends with, and you just have no problem going up and shooting them and then cutting up the one's body, which also... Right. And to cut up a body, I feel like I've read before, like, whenever people do that, like, that's, like, a very strenuous, like, task.
Yeah.
Like, it's very hard to cut through everything. So, like, that takes a lot of work, and, like, it's just so messed up to me. I actually feel really bad for his family, because his dad said that they, like, had to sew him, well, his dad obviously didn't, but he had to, like, sew him back together. And, like, I just think that's so sad.
Yeah, that really is.
You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so then he also claims that his motive for killing Julie was only to frame Sam to make it look like he was on the run. He would have only killed Sam, but he needed for Sam to look guilty of something. So this guy just, like, really thought that he was so smart and he was going to get away with it.
There's just, like, no point in killing them, though.
Like, I know, it's so aggravating. You can't even
say money is the motive.
But, like, what, you were just going to take all of his... $50,000-$60,000, that's what you killed somebody for? And you'd barely even need $400.
Right, and, like, if I were to kill someone and I lived in California, not that I will, disclaimer, I would kill a much more rich person. There are plenty of them in that state.
Yeah. It was just so weird.
Why would you kill someone you were friends with? And why would you kill another person you were friends with just to cover up the other murder?
I also feel like maybe he just, like, had this, like, urge in his body to do this.
Maybe. I can't relate.
No.
But... I don't even understand that.
Yeah, I don't know. So, he even pleads not guilty after this, even though they have a full, complete confession. And he's held without bond, and a year after he was arrested, he sits down for an interview and completely changes his story. So he claims that he didn't do what police are saying that he did, and none of it's true. He made it all up. That was his most recent thing. And then he also says he wishes that Rachel could be in there with him because he misses her so much.
Well, maybe if you missed your fiance, maybe you shouldn't have done something to separate you two for, I don't know, the rest of your life. Just
right. Like, you could have been married to her.
Right.
And not that long after Dan sits down for this interview, Rachel's also arrested as an accessory and for lying to detectives. So she posts her bail and she's let out while she's awaiting trial. And Rachel claims that she had no idea that Dan had done this or could do anything like it. She claimed that Dan told her that he had borrowed money from loan sharks and that he owed bad people money and that he could get hurt if he doesn't pay them back. So I assume that's why he... was telling her that he needed to kill Sam to get this money.
Well, you know, she didn't seem very surprised when they were on the phone.
Right.
She just seemed annoyed.
Yes. She was also very cold, in my opinion. The way, like, she is.
Yeah.
But yeah, he only got $400, so I'm not really even sure why he told her this, because it's not like he... came into some, like, large amount of money from this. And Rachel's also questioned on the fact that she claims that she had seen Sam and Dan leaving the apartment complex in Dan's car when originally she had claimed that her and Dan had seen Sam walking around with some guy in a baseball cap, which is very strange. And Rachel says that she never really claimed that she saw the person, but Dan had said that there was another person and she just kind of believed him. and she didn't think anything of it, but she did, like, looking back on, like, the interrogation, she did claim that she saw a person with a baseball cap when she was originally interrogated by investigators on this. So this was a big reason why she was arrested, because of the fact that she claimed that she saw another person and there was no other person, so she lied. But I could see her trusting her fiance and not thinking anything of it when detectives are, like, asking if they saw Sam with anybody. And maybe she, like, says, oh, yeah, we saw him walking around with a baseball cap, a guy with a baseball cap, remembering that Dan had told her this. And maybe she was just, like, trying to help.
Or maybe because he told her, she, in her mind, was like, yeah, I saw that, too.
Yeah, that, yeah, like, she just, I don't know, she made it up in her head that she also did see it. You know, I think that that happens often. It's like, you don't fully remember things, and you think you remember things.
Right.
So Rachel also claims that the night that Julie was murdered, Dan came back to their apartment having a panic attack. She says that, I'm sorry, this was, he came back to the apartment having a panic attack. This would have been after he murdered Sam, before the show. But that day, he comes back, he's having a panic attack, and she didn't know that he had murdered Sam at this point. She says that he was frantic, he was having some sort of a panic attack or a heart attack. She said he was pacing around the room, holding himself to the wall, clutching his chest. And she claims that at the time, she was unsure why he was, like, acting that way. But looking back, it obviously all makes sense now.
Right.
So I want to talk a little bit more as to why Rachel was arrested, because up until now, there was really no real speculation that she had ever been involved. But first of all, when Dan was texting Julie from Sam's phone after the show, after the performance, because he texted her while he was in between scenes, but he also had obviously sent out two other texts and he was home.
No sex.
No sex. And investigators found it strange that she never realized that Dan was texting on Sam's phone, because they were two totally different phones. Like, it was way different than his phone. And they thought that it was weird that she didn't notice this, because they were together when he was sending these texts. And she claimed that they were together when he was sending these texts. Because at first, like, she was kind of his alibi, I guess. Right. And on top of it, so Dan's phone could be, the volume could be turned up and down. It could be set to no sound or vibrate or whatever. Whereas Sam's phone, it only had sound, and it would vibrate, but loudly. So, like, the fact that you couldn't put that phone on silent and stuff, how did she not notice that he's getting text messages back from Julie, is basically what they were saying.
Right.
So investigators also found, on a search of Rachel and Dan's home computer, a number of really suspicious Google searches, including how to hide a body and quick ways to kill people. Jeez. Also, and there was no proof that it was either Rachel or Dan who had searched that, because it's their home computer.
Right.
But the night that Julie was killed, almost exactly at the time that Julie was going to meet what she thought was Sam, but was actually Dan, Rachel responded to a Facebook message at 11:35 to Julie. And Julie had said to Rachel around noon that day, she had sent a Facebook message to Julie, or wrote on her wall, and said, "Hello, darling. I miss hanging out with you. I saw your fiance last night when I was hanging out with Sam, Ruben, and Lester. I hear you're getting married next week. Congrats. How are you?" And then Rachel's message at 11:35 said, "Haha, so busy you can't imagine. We'll hang when everything settles and the summer sun hits the pool." So detectives have an issue with this, because A, it appears like she's trying to give herself, like, an alibi by, like, responding at this time, which I don't know that I draw that from it. It was just, like, weird timing. But B, Rachel claims that the night of Julie's murder or whatever, she had fallen asleep on the couch. So that's how she didn't know that Dan had gone up there and this whole thing had happened. And what's weird about it is she was up sitting at her computer only 25 minutes before this, responding to a Facebook message. So we have to be led to believe then that she responded to this message, went on the couch, passed out, and was in such a deep sleep that she didn't even hear Dan opening and closing the door or anything like that, or him leaving.
But Do we know that she answered it on her computer?
Well, they didn't have smartphones.
Yes, they did. It was 2010.
Yeah, but they weren't smartphones. They're like, one was a flip phone. It was like they had the candy bar phones and flip phones.
Huh.
Also, mind you, they did not have money. And 2010 smartphones were very, very new, if even really a thing. It was like you would have
a BlackBerry.
Little bit of internet. Okay, yeah, you did.
I was not rich.
Yeah, but they definitely did not have the money. Okay. I did not have a BlackBerry.
Okay, well, that's a whole nother story.
I still had like an Envy, so I'm just saying. And I came from a family that had money and could afford like a nice phone.
Mm-hmm.
And they came from, they were probably paying their own bills and.
Right, they were adults.
I mean, but regardless, she could have been, even if she did answer from her phone, 25 minutes before this, she responded.
Yeah.
But I've also seen conflicting statements about this, because I've seen 11:35, I've also seen 11:10. And 11:10 would totally change that fact for me.
For sure.
Because who's to say you didn't fall asleep? Still a little convenient.
Definitely convenient.
But then again, I mean, they lived in the same apartment complex. So who knows if she may even be not remembering the night correctly. And he told her that he was like running somewhere real quick. And she didn't want to believe these things for a while, you know?
Yeah, he could be like, oh, I want a snack. I'm going to the convenience store.
Sure.
Yeah.
So investigators also find the conversation between Dan and Rachel in the interrogation room very phony and set up. So they have this, remember when Dan was on the phone with Rachel and he wanted her to come down to the station because he was going to confess? Yeah. So she goes down and like she is brought in and they're both in the interrogation room together. And it's just a very strange feeling conversation, and I would play it, but I feel like I've played so much of the interrogation that I don't need to like keep playing more, but
right.
It's just very like she claims that she was like so shocked and really surprised and like taken back by everything, but she's super calm when asking him questions about the murder. She's like, why did you do this? Like, what made you do this? Like, I can't believe you did this. Like, it's just weird, and it's almost like they describe it as if like the two of them are like reading from a script. Like, it's just
well
bizarre, and it seemed phony, but at the same time, I mean, everybody reacts differently under stress and in different situations.
True.
So I don't know if maybe she was on some drugs and just calmed down, but she
popped a bunch of Xannies.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, I mean, in my opinion, things are just, like, super bizarre about that whole situation. But it almost seems like she just trusted her fiancé, thought nothing of it, and was unknowingly covering for him.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, like, my takeaway. And I could totally be wrong, but nothing really points to her, like, being a part of this, other than the fact that she's the one who called about the murder weapon, which Dan's brother Tim had, so she brings in this evidence, and it's like, okay, but she knew about this. Did she already know about this, or did she really just find out about it?
Right. I mean, the way she acted on the phone, it sounded like she already knew about it for sure.
Right, and she also knew that she was being recorded, you know?
True, she did mention that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, remember, Dan had pled not guilty, and I feel like his lawyer probably encouraged him to do that so maybe he could get a plea deal and take the death penalty off the table, because at this point in time, the death penalty was still, because I think that California doesn't have the death penalty anymore. Right?
Really?
I thought that they, like, recently in the last couple of years had, like, overturned it or something, or they're not, like, convicting people now to death, or sentencing them to death. Or there's been, like, a halt in the deaths. I don't know. But there was still a death penalty, but there was no plea deal. So I'm really not sure why he went to trial with this much evidence stacked up against him, because it just seemed like a big waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
So the trial begins on December 9th, 2015, and the prosecution opens up. The prosecutor starts by saying that Dan had done all of this in order to get money for his wedding, and for his life with Rachel Buffett. He claims that Dan would have done anything for Rachel, and his sole motive was money here. Which is so weird.
Yeah.
The evidence that prosecution puts forth is a backpack filled with Sam's belongings, and it was found in Dan's parents' next-door neighbor's backyard. Yeah. They have the gun that was used to kill both Sam and Julie, which was registered to Dan's father.
Okay.
And this was what Rachel and Dan were talking about on the phone that she had to alert police about. That's what she was saying that she was going to turn in. And that his brother had it. They bring up this like strange drawing that was found in Sam's apartment with an Asian woman on a bed with flames around her, almost seeming to like mislead investigators into thinking that Sam was responsible for this and like drew this picture too. They discussed that Dan had told Wesley to wear a hat and sunglasses when he was withdrawing the money from the ATMs.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a wedding invitation found in Sam's apartment for Rachel and Dan's wedding, which police believe that the handwriting on the invitation and the handwriting on Julie's clothing were super comparable. They also, like, maybe it was on the envelope.
I was going to say, who handwrites her invitation?
I know, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, it had to be on the envelope.
Yeah.
Or something. They also bring up the internet searches that were on Dan and Rachel's computer, as well as the phone call between Rachel and Dan after he was arrested that implicates, like, specifically him stating, They also bring up that phone call between Rachel and Dan after he's arrested that, like, implicates both of them in this. And the prosecution made it really clear, a point to really clear Sam's name, specifically stating that Julie did stay over Sam's house every now and again, but they had no romantic relationship whatsoever. Julie had a boyfriend, and they were just really good friends. So I think they were just trying to clear his name.
Right.
So I want to talk a little bit about the defense's side, but it's really hard to find any information on that. And what's weird is the defense didn't really cross-examine any of the witnesses that the prosecution brought up.
Okay.
So that's why I don't understand why they went to trial with this, because they didn't even, like, fight a case. But his attorney attacked Rachel's character, actually, claiming that she was a manipulator in all of this and that she was behind it all and that they agreed with the prosecutor on one thing, he would do anything for Rachel. So because he doesn't even claim that Dan didn't do this. He just says that she was behind it, basically.
Okay.
So they each give their closing arguments, and the jury deliberates, and Dan is found guilty of both murders. Since it was a death penalty case, the jury had to decide if Dan would spend life in prison or be sentenced to death. They didn't take long to come back with their verdict, and Dan was sentenced to death. I haven't seen if there's a death date set or anything, but he is incarcerated in California at San Quentin State Prison. So, briefly, I want to move on to Rachel, because this is a little more recent, actually.
Okay.
So, she also had a trial coming up because of her arrest. And Rachel's trial began on September 4th, 2018.
Oh,
and prosecutors claim, yeah, it was pretty recent.
That's like very, very long after, though. It's like more so than usual.
Yeah, that's like really, really long after. I don't know if it kept getting like pushed off or what the story really is. I mean, his trial was, I don't have it written down. I think his trial was in 2015.
Okay.
So it was 3 years after that. So I don't know if they really wanted to wait until that came to a close so that they could get some evidence from that for this. Because then 3 years in between that would make sense.
Right.
So her trial began on September 4th, 2018, and prosecutors claim that Rachel manipulated Dan into this killing. They bring up all of the evidence from before, talking about her brother's axe and saw. They discuss the Facebook message, the cell phone, the seemingly phony interrogation tape of Dan and Rachel talking about the crime. They also discuss drug use, and allegedly there was a group of people that lived in the apartment complex, and there was, like, rampant drug use that Rachel had admitted to. And I'm not exactly sure what kind of drugs we're talking here that she was using or that anybody...
Oh, she admitted to using the drugs?
Yeah, she said that they did, like, they partied a lot. But okay. Dan had actually claimed previously that he dabbled, which these are not things you dabble in, so, but whatever. He dabbled in crystal meth, ecstasy, heroin, and a lot of different pills.
You don't dabble in heroin either. You're in or you're out.
Like, I just found that so weird.
I just dabble occasionally in crystal meth. It's not a problem.
So I don't know about her, what she did, but she did say that I guess a lot of them, like everybody by the pool would like take ecstasy and stuff like that. But I don't know if that's what she did. I don't know if we're talking about pot. I don't know. I don't know if we're talking about she dabbled in crystal meth and heroin. But basically, I think that they were just trying to like assassinate her character and make jurors question her because they didn't really have a point with this. They just said that. They discussed the fact that Rachel and Dan had lived together, so she would know what he was doing pretty much at all times because they lived in a little apartment, and you would know if he went somewhere, so they found that bizarre. They also discussed the fact that if Dan gained financially, then so did Rachel. So they talked about that with the whole thing with money.
Right.
They talk about this scene that she had the night of Julie's murder, right like before Julie was murdered, obviously, and after Sam was. And they talk about how she actually cried on stage during an emotional scene there. And her castmates all said that she normally didn't ever actually cry on stage. She never, like, could channel that emotion or whatever. So they talk about that and how it's weird. They also discuss the fact that she lied about this third man that she saw. And they bring up witnesses as well. And then it's time for the defense. So the defense opens up discussing how Dan feared that he was going to lose his fiancée, Rachel, since he couldn't afford the life he'd wanted to give her. So he would do anything, murder, lie, steal, just to keep her happy. And that's exactly what he did behind her back. They also state that Rachel hadn't lied to the police. She actually led them to really important evidence to help them convict Dan. And the defense really hammers on points that there is no evidence placing Rachel at the scene of either crime or that she had been at either of them or had anything to do with them. None of her DNA was found on the gun, which belonged to Dan's father. Her DNA wasn't found on the backpack. There was the loan shark that she had mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. His name was Chris Williams, and her and Dan had known him, and Dan wanted to borrow money from him. But Rachel wanted nothing to do with, like, borrowing money from a loan shark. And Rachel told Chris that Dan was a compulsive liar and couldn't be trusted also. So she obviously knew his character. And she called detectives to turn in the evidence to them. She didn't hide any of it. She also held a job this entire time at Medieval Times. And she never got in, like, any sort of trouble or anything. But most importantly, they hammered in on the fact that Dan insisted Rachel was not involved and had nothing to do with this. He never implicated her. He never said that she had any hand in this. This doesn't necessarily mean much to me because, A, he was probably protecting her. He probably still is obsessed with her and loves her. I got the vibe that he liked her way more than she liked him.
Yeah.
I totally got that vibe. And, like, she kind of says that without saying it. She was like, yeah, like, when we first met, I wasn't really, like, that into him, and I wasn't really in love with him, but then I was just, like, when he proposed, I was like, okay, yeah, I guess. I'm like, yikes.
I wouldn't ever, like, accept a proposal if I wasn't, like, all in it. Balls to the wall in it, yeah.
Yeah. I also think that he's a compulsive liar, so it doesn't mean anything what he has to say. So I didn't find much other evidence presented on either side. However, I'm sure that there's more out there. It's just probably really hard to come across.
Right.
But needless to say, Rachel Buffett is actually found guilty and was denied to be released on bail until her sentencing hearing. So on November 8th, 2018, Rachel spoke at her sentencing hearing, and this is what she had to say. I wanted to read this. I've always wanted to express my condolences to the Hare and Kibuishi families and offer support, but I assumed that any contact from me, a complete stranger before this case, would not be welcomed or helpful. So I sought to be respectful by giving them space. I hope my silence hasn't been misinterpreted or callous. I'm also so sorry that any of my actions caused more pain to the Hare and Kibawishi families. I wish Sam and Julie were still here. I wish I could have done something to save them. I wish I'd never met Daniel Wozniak. I wish I'd never let him into my life. I wish I saw him for the liar and the manipulator that he was from day one. And I wish there was something I could do to fix this now. My heart goes out to the Hare and Kibawishi families, and they will always be in my thoughts and prayers. So that was her statement.
I wasn't, sorry, I wasn't really, like, wowed by that.
I wasn't really anything either way.
No.
Like, I wasn't, like, wow, that she's so guilty, she's not accepting any responsibility, because if she had nothing to do with this, then she doesn't need to accept any responsibility.
Right.
I honestly feel a lot of ways about it now that I'm actually thinking about it, because I feel bad for her in some sense, but I can't tell if I'm being manipulated into feeling bad for her or if that was actually genuine and she meant what she said.
Right.
So Rachel was sentenced then to 24 months in jail for her first offense, which I couldn't tell which, but I think one was accessory after the fact. And I don't know what the other charge was, but there were two charges. And for her second, she was sentenced to 8 months in jail. The sentences were to be carried out consecutively, meaning she couldn't serve them both at the same time. But she begins her sentence with 79 days of credit for time that she has already served. And she also got an additional 79 days for good behavior, which I've never heard of, like, getting early into a sentencing. I've heard of, like, getting out on good behavior.
Right.
But from what I've read, she'll probably spend around a year in jail due to good behavior, because she's already gotten that credit and she's only spending, I mean, less than 3 years in jail anyway. And I think after at maximum 50% of your time served, you can get out on good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So Rachel is currently serving time at Orange County Women's Central Jail. So she's not in prison either. She's in jail.
Okay.
Which, I just don't know how I feel, because I don't find that there is enough evidence, in my opinion, that I could convict her of those things.
I don't think so at all.
Right? I find her weird and, like, shady. But
I don't think I would be like, oh, she had something to do with it.
Yeah, I don't think I could have convicted her of that, honestly. I was surprised when I found that she was guilty.
No, yeah.
But, I don't know, who knows? There may have been more evidence presented that I just didn't come across, but that was, like, the most that I could find, and I'm like, this isn't, like, concrete evidence that she had. I can't believe a jury found her guilty.
Right.
But, I mean, it's less than 3 years in jail. It's not prison.
It still shows up on her record. That sucks.
It does.
And it's still something that, I mean, from what I think, it's still something that she had nothing to do with.
Yeah, I do agree. I don't think she had anything to do with. And that's why when I think about her sentencing, like, hearing when she said that, that's why I'm like, well, if she had nothing to do with this, then she actually had a pretty decent, like, I don't know. Like, I thought that it was, what she said was, like, kind and she meant well, if she had nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
But all the speculators, you know how they get nuts out there, and they're all like, did I miss the part where she apologized for what she did? And it's like, why should she be apologizing though for what he did? And he was clearly the, and she didn't even like him that much.
I get, like, where people are like, well, she's behind it because he would do anything for her, but, like, if she didn't point blank say, please kill these people for me, he shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, I think that he did this for his own sick, self-serving...
And mom. Also, if it's about money, like, how long were they together before living, obviously, like, fine?
Yeah.
Why now?
And her family was paying for the wedding?
Yeah.
I just find it so bizarre, which is why I think that he was just sick and twisted and used the money as an excuse, but he just wanted to do this.
Maybe. He got the vibe that she didn't like him as much as he liked her. So he's like, maybe if I have all this money, she will pay more attention to me. She'll like me more. She'll stay with me, whatever.
Maybe. Or maybe she was getting attention from Sam, or she was giving Sam attention.
Maybe she was a lesbian with
Julie.
Yeah, I doubt that, but
it's just so crazy, and I feel so bad for all these families.
Yeah, because there's just no reason.
There was literally no reason for this.
Yeah,
but
especially
I know, especially Julie. Like, that, like, hurts my heart. I feel so bad for her family. There was no reason for that. That's why I say I think he just made up his mind and wanted to do this. Because what kind of person just callously lures somebody to an apartment just to kill her to cover for another one? And it's not even like you had to cover for the other one.
Right.
You probably, I mean, not probably, but you may have been able to get away with it.
Yeah.
I mean, not his actual plan of, like, the whole money thing that he never would have gotten away with, but
right.
There was no reason to kill Julie, and it's just, it's sad, and he affected so many people, and just the fact that he said that he wished Rachel was in there so they could be together just proves what a narcissist he is. Like, he is just a terrible person.
Yeah, for real.
But, I don't know, I will say this one, like, there's not much speculation out there. The only thing that there is to speculate is if Rachel was involved or not, really.
Right.
But I do go a little back and forth with it. I think I, like, land on the fact that I don't think she was involved, but...
Yeah, I don't think she was.
I just think that there were, like... And you know how I feel about coincidences, but I just feel like there were some, like, just weird things that, like... Right. Unfortunately didn't look good for her.
Right. And unfortunately, she's serving time because of that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, I mean, she will get out. It is on her record, but it's jail, not prison.
Right.
And, yeah, I don't know. Maybe she can live a normal life. Maybe not. I don't know. I feel for her.
Multiple times.
I know. But what's weird to me about that whole situation, too, is the fact that her brother, like, he got the saw and axe from her brother, which I find weird, which could mean nothing. It could just be, like, he just was like, oh, I need it for whatever, like.
He's like, I'm building a set.
Yeah, I need to borrow it. Probably.
Yeah.
And... I also find his brother strange. His brother was also arrested as an accessory. Tim.
Mm-hmm.
However, he did testify against Dan, so I don't know if I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if in order for his testimony or in exchange for his testimony, they dropped the charges against him. But very weird because Dan had gone to him with this box of, like, the gun and stuff like that.
Oh, so he hid it in the neighbor's yard?
Well, that's what I'm, like, wondering if he hid the backpack.
Yeah.
Because they got the backpack, so the brother knew where the backpack was.
Yeah.
You know, so he had to have known what was going on or something was going on. He's definitely suspicious.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Very weird one.
For sure. For sure.
Very twisty. But... Yeah, I hope that you guys liked this episode. We will be back again on Friday with another TV Time episode with The Bachelor and a little bit of Vanderpump that you're going to watch this week.
Yes, I will watch.
And then we'll be back next week with another True Crime episode. Are we going to do a two-parter?
I thought we talked about that.
So yeah, we'll be back. Next Monday and Wednesday with a two-part episode, which is exciting. I hope you guys like this episode. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.